Welcome to the podcast or Zoom. What do we call this now? Is it like a vlog? Like,
hey, buddies.
What do we call vlog. It?
Hey, buddy. We gotta start with that.
It's a comics clap trap vlog.
Man. What is a vlog?
Flawless intro here.
Edit that out, Josh.
No, I'm leaving it all.
TGIF, everyone. It's been a very crazy week here in California, and we're wishing everybody embracing with all this craziness here, wishing everybody well and safe. But we're really excited that we're able to get together and talk to each other, and also talk to one of our favorite Bay Area comics cartoonists. God, she's grown so much, don't you think, guys? No. So Sophie Yano, she's come out with a new book called The Contradictions. And this actually was a story that she had posted or was showing on the web for a while, and it won an Eisner. And so now it's published. It just released this week about her time in France and in Europe and dealing with politics and activism and figuring out all those things and studying there abroad. So we're really excited to have her in the program. We'd like to talk about this new book and all her mini comics and everything else. And so
welcome and to us knowing her way back when also.
Yeah, and so we can embarrass her and talk about old times in the comic scene from her various places that she's been. So welcome to the program, Sophie.
Yay.
Hey.
Whoa.
Hello.
You just showed up like that.
I just walked right in.
That's always so worth it. That reveal.
Are you doing okay in these horrible conditions?
Yeah, Sophie, where are you right now?
I'm in San Rafael, so North Bay. It's like 300 ppm or what is right. How do you say it? I think it's similar in all of the Bay Area right now because everything just settled in. But most of the fires really close to me are pretty contained, so I don't think it's any worse than like what everybody else is getting right now.
That's really crazy. I actually didn't know you were in California right now.
Yeah, I moved back. So I was teaching at CCS and living in Vermont, but I moved back like a year and a half ago, maybe almost 2 years ago.
What?
Maybe 2 years ago. Yeah, but I've been drawing the book like the entire time. So 2 weeks, I finished 2 weeks before the March 16th, like lockdown. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go out. I'm going to hang out with people. I'm going to go dancing. And then it was like, no, you're not. Draw more comics or something.
That's so awesome.
Was it nerve-wracking getting you finished so early, but then all the shutdown? I'm sure your book probably has, just like other John and Quarterly books have gone through, they probably had to like move where they printed it and like.
Yeah, it was supposed to be printed somewhere in Asia, and then it ended up being printed in Turkey.
Yeah.
So.
Did it?
That's why it has the decal edge though, because they were like, "Oh, this printer in Turkey can do a decal edge. We don't usually, do you want a decal edge?" I was like, "Yeah, sure, sounds good."
Well, it's just your book just came out this week, so how are you trying to, I guess, celebrate that, with all this craziness going on?
I've done a few events, digital, Zoomy things, I had a socially distanced outdoor hangout with some cartoonist friends on Tuesday when the book came out. So
very cool.
Trying to do what you can.
And you've been doing a lot of interviews too, right?
More than usual. Yeah.
That's always fun.
I'm excited to be here because this is I know you guys. This is chill.
So we all met Sophie when she was working at the comic shop.
That's right.
Do I were you working at the comic shop?
Which well, I was working at Comic Relief in 2009. So
yeah, that's right.
So Josh came in, I think, probably the most regular of any of y'all.
Mm-hmm. I thought did you also work at Escapist? Because I thought we talked at the
I did because okay, I worked at Comic Relief and then I like left for 3 months to do an internship at Fantagraphics, and then when I came, like in that time Comic Relief closed, the Dark Carnival guy Jack bought all of the stock and opened the Escapist, and I helped like launch the Escapist, like I built the website and stuff for them. Oh, and God. Then when I came back, I just started working at the Escapist. So,
yeah.
But I think like maybe I met some of you at like a Dirty Drawers thing.
Yeah, I feel like I met you before that.
Yeah.
Because I remember you and Kane Lynch.
Yeah. So we went to Santa Cruz together, and
there you go.
He's like a year older than me, so he graduated a year ahead. And like my senior year, we did like a 24-hour comics together, and like I think we tabled at Stumptown together, and maybe I hung out with some of you guys there before I was working in Comic Relief, but
yeah
that was
exciting. Awesome. Well, the exciting Sacramento Indie Euphoria.
Oh yeah.
Yes, the four of us exhibited at this notorious show, and probably the four of us is more than number of people who actually attended the show as guests.
Yeah, that was a funny thing. I after that show I had like a sore throat while I was there, and I ended up drinking tea because I was like trying to deal with it, and then I saw that the tea was like a mango tea, and I had just been told that I had a mango allergy.
Oh no.
So I don't know, it was awful. I like went to the hospital. I had to pay this like giant bill for like, and they were like, you're fine, here's some Vicodin, like you just have a sore throat, like whatever. But that was like right after that show. Anyway, that weekend was extra awful.
Yeah, that thing was terrible.
But it's neat that like you know, you were in this area that like you could be so young and then like kind of immediately get into comics, you know.
Yeah.
For us, like I think there was quite a, for me at least, there was quite a journey of like going to art school and trying to be an artist and like, oh, I discover this. But it's kind of neat to think that like you came out of high school and was like, oh, there's this cool zine, mini comic scene.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
I can get into. Yeah.
I mean,
start doing that.
Well, I grew up, okay, so there weren't any comic shop. There was like one comic shop in Marin, and it wasn't close to where I lived. There was like a trip I would go on to Ashland, Oregon once a year.
I was just
and
there.
There's a comic shop there that's a good comic shop. It's called like
really?
Comics for Adults or something.
Yeah, it's called Big Fun Comics for Adults.
Yeah.
It's upstairs from
Yeah. So like the first time I went to that on that trip, like I went up and like bought some Adrian Tomina stuff, I think, and some like, that's like where I got my first copy of like the Comics Journal. I guess when I was in eighth grade, I used to go to Comic Relief a little bit. Like my mom would go to Ashkenaz for like clogging lessons or something. And she would like, cool. She would like drop me off on like Shattuck or that like tracks. On Telegraph, and I would like pick up comics or whatever. And then in high school, I went to Ape a lot, and like mm-hmm. that very quick, as soon as I went, I was like Ape is my favorite mm-hmm. weekend of the year, like it's so cool. And I tabled at Ape my senior year of high school with two of my friends. We made like a really crappy zine. Didn't have any comics in it. Like I made some drawings for it. I think it had like a recipe for borscht and like some just like weird high school poetry and like little random stuff. But like yeah, I was pretty excited about Ape and like indie comics in
yeah. high school. That's neat that you know, I'm happy that like even the next generation might even get into comics or you know indie comics even sooner, and I think
yeah.
that's kind of a neat thing. Yeah, I was just in Ashland, and the funny thing about that store was I had never been to Ashland before, and I looked up on my phone like if there was a comic book store, and they said there was one, and I was like, where is this? And I looked up, and it was right there, like right in front of me, on top of a building, and it was like, it said comics for adults, and I was like, that's like, I don't know, is it like, you know, but then I was like, I'm in Ashland, like, I mean, it's not going to be a porn comic in the middle of Ashland, you know?
Yeah.
So then I was going to go, but then it was, it's the middle of the pandemic, and the store is very small,
right,
and they were letting people in, and I was like, I don't know if this is a good idea, so I've never been. But I'm happy to know that that's a good store.
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty solid.
Yeah.
Hey, tell us about your new book.
Oh yeah, so
I'm
my
changing
new book
subject
is The Contradictions. Look, I have a copy here because I've been doing this. So, it's actually like auto fiction. It's not straight memoir. Sort of a coming of age story, somewhat based on my experiences of studying abroad. And when I was studying abroad, I ended up hitchhiking around Western Europe a bit on a number of different trips. But the story itself has like a sort of fictionalized version of me meeting this person, Zena, and getting sort of enraptured with some of her politics, and she kind of takes me on a wild ride or takes character Sophie on a wild ride. So
wow, yeah. So it's not straight auto bio, it's like a composite.
Yeah
we should think of what's the fiction and what's the nonfiction.
Yeah, wouldn't you like to know?
I would. So if this was like, this was on this, you had this as a web comic at first, and I wondered, and I didn't get a chance to read the entire comic online, but were there any like differences between the book and the comic, the web comic version? Were there any like decisions made on how to show it?
Well, so I knew that I wanted to make it as a book before I even started as a web comic, and mm-hmm. I also actually had signed the deal with Drawn and Quarterly before I started putting it online. I just always wanted to do the webcomic. And so that was kind of a stipulation of like the publishers that I was talking to. I was just like, I want to have it online. Mm. And the pipe dream, I was like, if I have it online, I could win an Eisner before the book even comes out. And mm-hmm. then it did. So that was a crazy thing. I thought of it in spreads as I was putting it online, even though it's like a scroll thing, like I was always, everything is thinking of it in spreads. So mm-hmm. yeah, nothing really different except for it's much sharper in print.
So when the story happens, when are you like in college at that time or after?
So I studied abroad my junior year of college, the end of my junior year of college, and it's based on that time period.
And were you thinking of like comics when you were there, or you were more into like the art scene and how it
I had read like French comics, although like mm-hmm. I wasn't really like I was into GP. Mm-hmm. Artist GP, but I thought he was French, but he's actually Italian. But at the time I was like, yeah, I like French cartoonists, like GP. And
showed up in France and were like, where's GP?
Show me the GP. Yeah. I had done a quarter system at Santa Cruz. I had done like a quarter where I did an independent study making comics mm-hmm. At that point, but I had basically managed to make like maybe 6 full color watercolor comics at like 11 by 17, you know, over the course of that like 3 month period and not actually ever finished a story, like just, you know, I knew that I wanted to make comics, but I so far was completely pretty unsuccessful at that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you were there, were you going to an art school? Was it Columbia?
No. So there were students there who were, there were students there who had, were studying abroad from like various schools in New York. And it was, I was at the American University of Paris, uh-huh. which is like this Anglophone school. And it's, it draws the sort of like wealthy elite from like international wealthy elite. So I was coming from like UC Santa Cruz, like public university, to this like very different environment. Like it was, yeah. And it wasn't, and I wasn't, able to like get into any art classes there. So I also was having, like, I was an art student at Santa Cruz, but then I like wasn't able to, take any like drawing or any kind of art stuff while I was there. So two things that I think felt kind of alienating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I was reading it though, I kept trying to guess at to what time period, everything was happening, you know, so mm-hmm. This was happening what in the early 2000s?
So it was 2008 that I was there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like it just felt, even though I didn't quite knew, I don't think you specifically said what date it was, just the way that you like kind of drew the surroundings and how like people were reacting, I really did feel like that was the time period, you know. And I was like, oh yeah, time period, but I don't know if it is, you know, like you don't specifically say it. And I think that's one of the best things about this book. It's so subtle, like everything is so subtle about this book. I mean, me and Josh were talking about this earlier, and he also was like, yeah, the book is really a subtle book. How does one go about pitching something this subtle? Like, you know, like what is the elevator pitch to this? Like, usually, like, you know, like, if you have a pitch, it's like, it's this crazy thing where this thing crashes into, you know, but like,
you have a book, yeah, yeah.
How do you go and say, hey, you know, it's a book about this girl who just goes on, you know, a road trip through Europe, you know, and I'll be like, wait, how do you do it now? So, how did this come about?
Well, I, let's see, so I had already thumbnailed the whole thing when I was sending it to publishers. Uh-huh. So there was at least that, if they were like willing to give it a chance, they could read the things, but I don't think it had a great log line or anything. I mean, I think that some of the hooks are like dealing with like leftist politics. And like, that's a thing right now that I think a lot of people are kind of starting mm-hmm. to wonder about. And like the coming of age thing is like an element of it, but yeah, I mean, I think like I really like didn't know where I was gonna end up taking the book, and I like talked to quite a few different publishers about it, like over actually even like a long period of time, because the book kept changing. Like when I first started doing it, I was like I don't know, 6 years ago, I was like, oh, like it's going to be memoir or whatever. And then as I worked on it, I just like ended up being like, okay, no, this isn't going to be memoir. And yeah, so like, I don't know. I mean,
yeah, that's interesting. You know, just sort of like, you know, how do you self pitch this book when it's kind of changing in your head too? So, I love the pacing of this book. And I think it matches the whole story, the storytelling of it, where it progresses. It's like this slow, it's not a slow, but it's just like it's very patient, takes its time. And I think it's like how the character is trying to figure things out too, where she's just observing what's going on around her and reading things and has some certain ideas at first, and then they start to kind of, she starts to question certain things and starts to like kind of question herself and like her passions and also her like ethical choices, moral ethical choices. And I guess I just maybe wanted to ask, like, how is the art kind of, how did you think about the art and the style of it to match the whole mood of the story? Did you like make certain decisions?
Yeah, I definitely, I mean, when I spent a long time trying to figure out how I was going to draw it. Cause like, I mean, it doesn't look very much like any of the other stuff that I've done, I think. I mean, I think in terms of like maybe the shapes of the characters, like, you know, they're lanky and whatever, but yeah, I just spent a long time like redrawing the early pages in different styles. Like there was one version where I was doing everything in pencil with like shade, you know, tonal stuff. And I almost ended up going with that. And then I was like, no, this isn't quite there. And part of it was, I think I felt like I couldn't reproduce that effect, like page after page in a way. Like it was like when I was doing pencil stuff, I was like, I want it to look sloppy, but also like not, you know, it's like, I want it to look like GP, but I can't do it. So it's like, okay, well, let's go like the other direction. And I think, I mean, like, I don't know, the fact that it's like a stark black and white, like, I feel like in a lot of sort of art house cinema that's kind of black and white, you get that sort of dirtily, yeah, like slow and pace. It kind of creates that vibe.
Does feel like a little European comics though. Like we were talking about like kind of Juice Swart. I don't know if that's how you pronounce his name, but very art deco, very, you know, very, I don't know what you guys think, but
I feel like your art has like totally excelled so fast, you know. Yeah.
But I also loved your other stuff too, the gestural stuff, and I think Josh will talk more about it.
Yeah, well, I was just, you know, I pulled out like all of the books that I have by you from over the years, and I have like some, I'm not going to show them all, but I have like something by you from like every couple years,
like different eras.
Yeah it's like going back like 10 or 11 years or whatever, every couple years I have a book from you, and it seems like in between you made like really conscious choices about how you wanted your characters to look and how you wanted your art to look. And it's not just like even a continuum of like detail to abstraction or something. It seems like you each time really kind of tear it down and decide how you want to do it. And I don't know if that's true, but like it's really noticeable, and it looks like, you know, you really consciously did it, but I don't know if you are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that like part of it is that for me to, I'm not somebody who like sits down and just draws comics every day. Like I'm not just like, cool, I'll just draw another page, like no big deal. Like it's really, I think part of it is like trying to make it interesting for myself and like feel like I'm actually exploring something new, and like so some of that comes out in like trying to find a different style. But also like I do feel like with War Streets and Houses, I was trying to make that, like I was trying to just like whip that out so that it would come out, and like people who were involved in the strike, because it was about like the Montreal student strike and some of the stuff surrounding that, like I just wanted it to like get out there. So that was kind of like the method was, you know, tied to that need. And then also like when I was doing the mini comics that came before that, I was really trying to learn how to write when I was doing those, so I was really not focusing on the art. I was just kind of like, you know. But I think something cool that happened there was that because I was focusing on the writing, I learned that like people still kind of thought that the simplified drawings were like interesting, and so I think that gave me a little bit of like freedom, like when I did this book where I wanted to, well, another reason why the style changed is because I really wanted to have like, you know, there's not a ton of backgrounds, but when there are, like I wanted it to feel more like a solid place than in the other books. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so like I made that choice to sort of draw it in this way because of that need.
I was, you know, the last book I think I really read of yours was the one that Josh. Nice. So I was kind of expecting that, and then when I started reading this, and just like right off the bat, like the first couple of panels, just like because it was like these beautiful stark black and white with like this kind of like shading, you know, like it was just black and white with all this shadow and stuff on it. That I'm looking for it now, but it was like I was like, whoa, you know, like this is a, you know, like either this is like a destination for you, like as in like, you know, you're building up to this, or this is just a whole different style that you put in. But I was like really like knocked out, and I don't think, and this is not like I think in this way all your art in this book like came together like perfectly, you know what I mean? And even the background, like at first I was like, oh, there should be more background. And I realized that the background is really intentional because it doesn't really feel very floaty. Like it has this thing with this character that is like it's almost dreamlike, but at the same time, it's also grounded, you know? So I really appreciate that part of your drawings. It, like, there was a lot of times I just feel like everything was just kind of like very dreamlike, even though it wasn't.
Cool, man. It's so fun to talk to cartoonists about this.
Yeah, it's just so, it's like, it was just, it's, I guess also it's so solid. Like it's quite different than a lot of what you've done. It's like, there's no like little hatching or anything. It's just super solid and clean. I love it. Yeah. I love the style. I think
any of the styles too. And I know you kind of evolve throughout every book that you write, in situ, the mini comic, I think it's a mini comic, and then like what is a glacier, like it's still no matter which style, it seems really proficient, like you're really proficient in what tools you're using when you're using them, and it just seems really exciting to look at. And but I think also the common theme too, I mean we could talk more about style if you want, but I was going to talk about like kind of like the themes that you talk about in your work, and it's a lot of it is focus on like political things and activism, and so I wanted to talk more about how you use comics, or how you believe comics is a great platform for that type of storytelling or documenting. Like you were saying with the war on streets and houses, you really wanted to get it out there and wanted to be
I think like someone asked me this question before, or a similar question, and I was kind of like,
you didn't ask it like as great as I did.
No, but I'm going to give a better answer is what I'm getting at. Like, I think one of the great things about comics is that, you know, they're really accessible in terms of like being able to make them. And like, that's something that I've always been like, comics is awesome because like, there's such a low barrier to entry in terms of like financial, you know, mm-hmm. access to technology and things, you know, like that. I mean, you can make a zine, you can like go and scan stuff at the library. Like if you want to make a web comic, I mean, you know, there's more like the one barrier is time. Like it definitely takes a lot of time, or it can. And so, I mean, that's just one of the reasons that I love them. But as far as like why politics, I don't think I like started out making comics. I've just loved comics for a long time. And I think it's more just that I ended up making comics because I love reading comics and I like drawing, and it just turns out that the things that I'm interested in talking about, or that I like think about a lot, have mm-hmm. to do with, you know, politics. So for better or worse, that's just kind of what I'm doing. And I think it's cool that like during the Montreal strike, one of the things that I was a part of this collective that would like put stuff out, like we created zines like during the strike that we would like give out at the demos and stuff. So like that was a cool thing that was like pretty specific to comics, but like at the same time people were making films, and you know, there was like a film release with like using footage of the of the protests that was like, while you know, the protests lasted for like 6 months or something, and that mm-hmm. came out like 4 months in, or I don't know, 5 months in. And so like, you know, there's definitely other mediums that can accomplish, I think, you know, that kind of thing. But
I you know, one of my the things that I love about this book and in comics in general is I love when people don't use narration boxes. Mm-hmm. I find that especially in auto bio, when you don't use narration boxes, it just makes the comic so much more intimate, you know.
Yeah.
And it does feel like this comic does feel a little bit about like almost voyeuristic, whereas like kind of like slowly following this girl and her adventures and just kind of like a fly on the wall. And I think it's really, it works really well. But did you have like Did it always have not having any narration? Did you plan it this way?
Or? No, yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I, you know, there were a number of reasons I ended up not doing a memoir about this kind of time. Oh. But I think that was one of the challenges, or something that I was interested in doing, was making a comic that was more like based on showing and not just like having this narration. And that's, I think, one of the, you know, of the reasons, like that's one of the reasons I think I ended up fictionalizing it more, because I was like, okay, I want to show this scene, and I want to, you know, I want to have things happening that establish things without me explaining, you know, what my character is thinking or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that was, yeah, that was a choice. And I think, like, yeah, at the beginning, there's a little bit of narration, but as I was writing it, at some point, you know, I was like, well, do I keep the narration at the beginning? Because it's really not, mm-hmm. you know, but then I just felt like, well, that'll just be like the sort of establishing little piece. And then I just didn't want to have it, yeah, throughout. And then, like, the only time you get it again is like when the character is like tripping. So I felt like that's yeah. kind of like a weird... weird space, and you can kind of change the rules when something like that is happening. So that created like a fun thing to do there, I think.
Yeah, a couple of things that the way that you did that, like the choice you made for me, made a couple of things happen. One, the pacing is so much more deliberate, you know, like, and I love that you like that's so smartly done here, where like you don't try to cram something that someone says, like you don't try to cram like 8 word balloons into one panel, you know, like if somebody's right. saying something long, it takes that amount of time, you know, in each panel to say it, you know, like if it's a long sentence, it could be one, like 2 panels before they actually say one sentence, you know, and like makes that pacing more deliberate. And I love the fact that you don't explain a lot of things. So we just have to kind of guess and kind mm-hmm. of be that person that is just like kind of like observing this life, because like you don't come out and say, oh, you know what, I'm going here now and this is what's happening. And so you just have to be that person that's patient and wait for like to take clues and to take your art and your word and then form that story within me. So basically you're not really telling me anything. The story that I'm forming, I'm also involved in, which is, I think it's really cool.
Thank you. One yeah. of the things, without like spoiling, but like one of the like major sort of points at the very end was like, I was a scene that I had in my mind of being like, okay, this is the scene that I kind of want to be where it concludes. And, but I didn't want to narrate it all. I just wanted the reader to know what it means, like when this thing is happening. And so it was a thing where it was like, well, you know, crossing my fingers, like, I hope I set this up right. Cause if I didn't, it's like, well, I'm not telling you what I felt, you know.
Yeah, me and Josh just had a debate about discussing what that meant.
I mean, I think it's probably open to, you know, yeah, like yeah, a lot yeah. of good literature that you can interpret it a number of different ways, but like, that's what, yeah. When we were talking about the subtlety of it, like, and how you don't hold the reader's hand really strongly, there's mm-hmm. many points where I'm like, okay, this character just said this to this character, and how is she feeling about that, you know, like, because it's very it's a little bit opaque in a lot of ways, like the yeah, characters yeah. aren't like cartoony expressive, and they're not
very expensive, right? Yeah,
yeah, they're not saying what they're mm-hmm. what they're feeling, and I'm like, you know, they're friends, but is this like maybe a little bit of bullying? And like, I was, you know, it was, and politics is a, and like discussions of economics and stuff are a presence in the story, but I felt like it really is a story about like loneliness and finding your, you know, place in a situation and in a social circle. And
yeah,
so all of these, yeah, there's no question here. Talk about that. That's my question. Talk more about that.
No, I mean, I think you're right. Like, I think that the politics thing is like a selling point or whatever. It's like right. a, this intersects with this thematic topic that like mm-hmm. is happening in the world. But I do think it's really like a story about navigating like friendship and situations and like, what do we get out of our relationships, and you know, is something all bad or all good, or is there some in between where it's like, you know, not so easy to categorize.
I think this really sparks a lot of like even just within me and Josh and Rena earlier today, just sparks within like a lot of discussion. Like you know, for me, the relationship with the two characters seemed like it was a great relationship, and it feels like to me like they were really good pals and they got along super great. And you know, like, and then some people might read it and be like, oh, well, this girl is being a little bit, you know, it's just left up to it's so subtle and like you don't really know if you like. Sometimes I liked a young Sophie, sometimes I was like, I don't like young Sophie that much. Sometimes I like, you know, like, and it's so like well-rounded, because I guess that's what life is like, you know, like there's no like there's no real save the cat moment in this book, and that's crazy. That's awesome. I broke that.
Yeah, and I think it's like the title too itself is like, you know, the contradictions, or like it feels like it's going one way, or like you have this, you feel like you have this certain idea, and that this is the right way, and then you're like doing something opposite, or you're just, or like it's just, you know, in terms of like ideas and like decisions you make, like especially in hitchhiking, like, you know, we shouldn't buy anything, like we shouldn't, you know, or we should, you know, we shouldn't be flying because of, you know, just but at the end there's this thing that happens where it's like that's sort of like,
yeah, how do you do that idea.
Yeah. And then the whole thing about dealing with politics and dealing with like real life and living the certain life that you live where you are, there is a bunch of things that a bunch of times when there are contradictions involved. And I thought that was a good way of playing that title into the whole story, where the story is, like Tin said, quiet and thoughtful and more kind of more heady and thoughtful, as opposed to in having different interpretations and contradictions and are part of that, you know. And yeah, it's deep, man.
I was worried, like, with the title, where I was just like, is this too like hitting you over the head with this idea, like, but hopefully the balance of the subtlety of the story makes it okay, like, yeah. I don't know.
I was actually like, when I was reading it, I was like, wait, why is this called contradiction? You know, like, everything is so subtle. And I was like, why is this called contradiction again? I really don't know, you know, and it's...
That's why, Tim. That's why.
All that stuff is really great. What did you find harder to do? Like, the fictionalized parts or the parts that were more memoir? Because for me, reading this, I'm just like, the fictionalized part must be really hard because it's all so subtle.
I would think
subtle.
It would be opposite, though.
A lot of like when I say a lot of it would be like a conversation that I had, you know, like where like the Xena character is like a mishmash of a bunch of different conversations that I had with different people and different sort of personalities and folks that I would see. And so I wouldn't say there's very little that I like pulled out of thin air, you know, like a lot of it is just like either exactly the conversation that I had with a certain person or like, you know, heavily based on it. I don't know how to do fiction any other way than have it be like thinly veiled something that I'm just sort of pulling out and like putting together. Like some people I know just make things that are a lot more abstractly built, but like I'm just not that creative.
Did you show any of the people that were involved in this time period, this comic? Do they know about this comic?
Yeah. I mean, especially early on, like that was another reason that like when I, in the really early phases, when I was writing stuff, I showed stuff to various people and some people were like, cool, go for it. And some people were like, I'd rather you didn't. And so I tried to like take that into consideration and like, you know, remove like scenes that were based on certain things or change a lot of stuff or, you know, and just basically, you know, not do like a straight memoir type thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So after the experiences in this book, what is your feeling of hitchhiking? Like, have you done any hitchhiking?
I think hitchhiking is awesome. I mean, the thing is, it's like, it's just really time consuming. Like, and it's hard if you have like obligations to be like, cool, I'm going to like maybe I'll arrive. I'm going to hitchhike across the country, but like, who knows what day I'll arrive. Like if you have a really open, you know, like maybe one day when I have a really open period of time, I would do it again. But like I definitely had hitchhiking experience that were just like 100% positive. Like there was no interpersonal conflict between me and the people I was hitchhiking with. Like all the rides were great. Like, you know, maybe something happened that was like a little absurd, but like nothing uncomfortable. I mean,
is hitchhiking better in America or than in Europe?
I haven't done any long distance hitchhiking in the States, but I actually had an easier time hitchhiking in the UK than like in Western Europe, although not in Scotland. Once we got to Scotland, it was hard. People were like, what the hell are you doing? But like in the rest of like, in like England, it was really, really easy.
I found this book to be such a, like, you know, I would never hitchhike. I'm not that type of person. I'm too scared for any of that kind of stuff. But I did find it to be a neat, like almost a manual into how to hitchhike. You know, like it could have also been like called How to Hitchhike. And like, I just love that. I for some reason, I had never thought to be like, oh, instead of hitchhiking on the street, you should just go to gas stations and ask people for rides.
That's I wanted to put that piece in where they're like, where the Sophie character is like, I went on this hitchhiking wiki and found like the best places because I wanted to be like, see, like, this is how you do it.
I also like that part where like you've been hitchhiking and then you meet up with your other friend who like, yeah, we did all this stuff, like we went to a rave, you know, and then you're busy just trying to get rides.
Right. Yeah. It's like,
and you were like, you went to a rave? you were dancing? Yeah, I love that. It was great. Go ahead, Josh.
I just wanted to ask Sophie about her time in Montreal, because that's a part of your history that I don't really know much about. Like, it's after you left the Bay Area when we were kind of like hanging out more, and it seemed like a pretty formative time for you, because like I just see your comics that you did after that period of time, and there was a lot more, I think, you know, European comics influence, that sort of style, and also just like you seem like a much more determined kind of creator after that time. And I mean, I guess we'll grow up and, you know, change and stuff, but it seems like from my perspective to have been a pretty important time in your development.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. I mean,
so were you doing there? Like,
so
figure it out for ourselves.
So like I originally went there for a pseudo artist residency, which I found through this cartoonist Vincent Giard, whose blog I read because I really liked his comics, and like because I had studied abroad in Paris, you know, I had this like tiny like basic grasp of French, and he put out a thing on his blog in French that was like, apply to be a resident. So I was like, I can read this, I should apply. So I did, and then it turned out to basically be like a studio of artists, and I like rented a room in Montreal. But it was so cheap. I mean, and also the artists that were there were amazing. And I think also because it was so cheap, everybody had more time to just like make comics. So I was like, whoa, like I am gonna figure out. And it just happened that while I was there, I got my first like freelance design job. And I had never done anything that paid that well. I had been working at the comic shop for like minimum wage. And I ended up with like this gig where I would design one print ad a month, and I could just live off of that. So it was basically like I was living off of like 2 days of work, and was able to be in the studio like all the time. And wow. So
why did you come back?
Why did I come back? Because I couldn't legally work there. So I was in this situation where I had to like cross the border every 6 months and see if they would let me back in, which was like, you know, I don't know, for some people, I know some folks who are up there and they're just like, yeah, I'm just going to do this forever. Like, I'm a permanent resident in Vermont, but like, I basically live in, you know, in Quebec. And
yeah.
So I did that for like the first couple years. And then I ended up like getting a job. Like, I got a sponsored visa through this co-op cafe where I was like doing design work for them. And then I ended up getting the CCS fellowship. And I planned to go back to Montreal, but that's another story. But while I was in Montreal, like there were like 24-hour comics going on like pretty regularly. And like we did this 48 hours of comics thing where we put out like a big, like a newspaper that we drew. Like we got a bunch of people into the studio, and the studio was huge. I mean, it had a kitchen, it had a giant table where we would all like eat lunch together all the time. It was like total dream, like multiple couches where you could take a nap, like in the middle
wow.
of the, like a library of comics. So I also got to like read more Francophone comics, because like the one of the cool things about Montreal is that like the, you know, they get books like imported from France all the time. And so they're still more expensive, but like it's really accessible and you can get them from the library too. So like the Montreal comic scene to me is like so cool, because they get access to all of the weirdo North American stuff, but they also get like the European comics. And so like, you know, some of the cartoonists like Julie Delport, I made friends with when I was up there, and there was like a publishing collective, and like they were really active, and it was just like a really crazy scene.
Perfect. I mean,
that seems awesomer than France.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you were talking about CCS, and you know, you have the comics community in the Bay Area and you in Montreal. Can you talk about like your experiences in those and your the various different, you know, communities,
different places,
kind of like what you feel like you got from them, and especially CCS. I don't know if you were teaching or you were just, you know, doing your art, but yeah, tell me.
So with CCS, I went to do the fellowship they have there. They give some money to like a, what do they call it? Like a upcoming or cartoonist or, and you get studio space and you get to like sit in on classes and take advantage of the lab they have there and all of that. So I got offered this fellowship and I went down, planned to be there for the year. And then I was kind of thinking, well, maybe I want to teach. So I applied to an MFA program back in Montreal. But CCS also figured out a way that they could like credit my fellowship year as like the first year of classes. Because I had been like going to all the classes and helping also to like run the crit groups for the classes. And my girlfriend and I from Montreal broke up, and so I was like, I don't really want to go back to Montreal right now. and at that point I was already like my fellowship year, I was working on a draft of The Contradiction. So that was 2014 to 2015. But I was like really banging my head against the wall with it. And so I just decided like, I will become a student, and I really wanted Jason Lutz to help me with it. He's like an amazing teacher. Mm-hmm. And I've been reading his comics since I was in high school. So I did a thesis year there where I was working on like editing the book, or editing a draft of it. And then I ended up teaching there for 2 years, and I quit teaching. Yeah. Almost 2 years ago. So, but as far as like the different scenes, I mean, I've always, like when I went to APE when I was like in high school, I met Helen Jo there, and that was kind of the first sort of comics world friend that I made. She had already been publishing stuff for a couple of years. I bought she was doing these sort of like K horror inspired mini comics at the time, and I just like wanted to be friends with cartoonists, because I was like, you guys are so cool and like such weirdos, and like don't, you know, it's like you're like we're like into reading but don't take ourselves too seriously is I think is like a pretty common thread. So yeah, I mean, I think like when I was here to begin with, like being a part of like working at Comic Relief and like being involved, like going to Dirty Drawers meetups and stuff was like super formative. It just made me feel like there was a community, and like, and I got, you know, even though I was not making very much money, like I got to, I was the small press buyer at Comic Relief while I was there. So like, I just got to see like all this stuff that people were doing. And yeah. And I think just having like, I ran a 24-hour comics day there once or twice. And I just had so many like drawing days with folks around here. And I think just having that just made me feel like I was a part of something, and like it made sense to keep working. And I feel like even though I did like a fine art like program, and I enjoyed making other types of work, like I think because of the proximity of like having gone to APE, I felt like even though I had no understanding of the economics of comics and like whether I would ever actually make any money, which is still sort of a question mark, but I felt like it was, I had an understanding of like how it worked or something, and like it didn't seem completely inaccessible, like the art world. So yeah. And then I think like being in Montreal, yeah, it was just a different world, like different folks with different inspirations. And I think because of the cheapness of it, more people who were able to like really focus and just obsess with comics. And yeah, I mean, at CCS, I made so many friends. Yeah, I just have a lot of cartoonist friends as a result of all this. But I think it really, like, I don't know, like I, as much as I love comics, like without having the community, like I have no idea if I would still be making comics at this point. Like that's, it's like important to me to have peers that I can talk to about it. And yeah,
comics is definitely one of the things that is like easiest to kind of like build a community around, I would think, you know, just like, you know, at a certain point, everyone's just so sharing and so excited to have others, you know. I don't know if it's changed at all, but I remember when, you know, like all of us were growing up, like when we, you know, when we met you, we were like, yeah, let's do it. And then like, in turn, you know, we depended on you when you were like buying for the comic. We were like, oh, show it to you, Sophie, she'll buy it for Comic Relief, you know? So it's just like, it's like such an inclusive kind of community at that, you know, at that time. So I think that's really neat that you have the same kind of experience.
Yeah. But on the other hand, I think it's like really amazing when you, that, you know, we've all stuck with it in a lot of ways, yeah, yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, I mean, like you said, it helps to know other cartoonists and stuff. It can be trying at times, and you know, I'm never surprised when somebody kind of drifts out of the scene. But it does seem like a lot of people drift out, but then come back eventually. So
I don't know anyone that's drifted out.
What? Yeah, you do.
You've just forgotten them.
you're like I've erased you from my group.
But yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, what are you working on now? What do you got going on?
I did a piece for the NIB like a couple months ago, like a 12-page thing about like the history of unionizing unions in the U.S. But like since then, I haven't really drawn comics. I mean, I've drawn a few comics for my Patreon, but I've been like extremely burnt out, and I also like I have other jobs, so right now I'm just like trying to do these, you know, like publicity stuff for it, which is not something that like feeds me. It's very stressful to me, so like that's where my free time outside of like trying to make money is happening. But like, but also I'm trying not to like, when I first stopped doing it, because I'd been working on this project had been like sort of hanging over me for so long, I was just like, what's next? Like, you know, but I'm trying to not like fixate on it too much because I just don't know. Like, I just don't know.
Does it feel good though?
Does it feel good to be done or to not know?
To have it out.
It does feel good to be done. I mean, I really, it's like really a surprise to me that I finished this book.
I mean, I can't believe you finished it like the beginning of this year. Like, it's just, that's kind of insane to me.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I should know that that's how it works, but but just that, you know, just you finished it and then like now it's here the same year. It's just kind of exciting.
Yeah.
And in this year, I wouldn't blame anybody for not getting any comics done or for doing nothing but comics. I feel like like alternate days sometimes. I feel like that's all I want to do. And then some days I just feel like, what's the point of doing, you know, any of this?
Yeah. Why draw comics when I can play Magic on the internet?
Don't bring that up.
I was very disappointed that... that this book didn't have any elements of you playing Magic, because, you know, I only recently discovered that you played, and, you know, because we talked about it at camp and Joshua told me that you were really good, that I was just like, now whenever I think of you, I'm like, ooh, I hope there's some her playing Magic in this book, you know.
Well Tim, if you got this book, Chainmail Bikini,
I don't have that book.
It's got a Helen Joe cover. Yeah, it's an anthology about women playing games, and Sophie has a two pager right in here about playing Magic.
It's just a little one.
Oh, okay.
Is that recent?
I'll show you. No, this is from a while back.
What?
Yeah. I haven't done a lot of comics about Magic. I do have this like, I mean, there's so many different genres that I would like. I really like sports manga, and I would love, like, do you know Patrick Crotty was doing like a he's one of the guys who runs Piao, and he was doing like a sort of sports manga-esque like Magic comic for a little while. Oh, and I was really? Like, oh, this is like so fun, like I totally want to do something like this. But it's like, I don't know, like I'm probably never gonna do something. Like, you know, there's just too many projects. I think that's one of the issues. Like right now, I'm just like, well, I could do anything, so I'm completely paralyzed.
Especially if you know it's going to take like years of your life.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like card game comics has worked for Japan for so long. Like, you know, like Yu-Gi-Oh or a Pokemon. I don't know why there hasn't been like a Magic the Gathering comic that is like that, you know, like a character striving to be the best at Magic and like just like so like dramatic, like laying down,
like, yeah, you should check out this comic. It's called Blackboard Flowers, but it'll break your heart because he stopped doing it. So
I mean, I'm not that good, and I don't play as often as you guys do, but I am like, I love the world of it, and I love like all that kind of stuff. So like I'm always like looking for any like kind of reference about it. I think that's kind of cool. Yeah. So that's my suggestion for what you should do next, Sophie. Autobio about your time at the Magic Grand Prix.
I love like Michael DeForge, who also plays, and I've played in tournaments with him like on my team.
Is he good?
Yeah, he's very good. But he's definitely peppered quite a few Magic references into like his recent, like, the last few books that he's done, but they're very subtle. Like if you're not fairly deep in, like, it's just like
it's been nice to see like your whole career, how, you know, when we first met you as like a young cartoonist, to how you've made such an amazing, you know, it's so good. It's like it's one of those things where you're like a I'm very proud.
You know, we don't get any credit though.
Yeah, we had something. Yeah, we had.
No, I really. I mean, it's nice getting to like talk to you guys again and be like, look what I did. We're on Core Release publishing me now.
Yeah, that is pretty awesome. I mean, like gotta be the dream, right? Like. All like when we started at Ape and everybody just wants like Drawn and Quarterly or Fantagraphics and stuff like that, and it's just, that must be so nice, you know, must be great.
Yeah, I definitely, when they offered, I was like, really? Like, I mean, I've been trying here, but like, yeah, really?
that's when you're so sitting cool. there at a con and signing next to Adrian Tomina, you'll be like, then it'll be like, what is happening, you know?
Yeah, I'll be like, remember when I came up to your table at Comic-Con and no one else was there because Comic-Con is weird and I probably said something weird to you? No, you don't remember.
Okay. that is kind of disappointing that there is no Comic-Cons right now, right?
Because yeah, I was supposed to be a guest this summer, which was like, but
that would be so awesome. But this next year.
Yep.
Hopefully, yeah.
You'll be at Comic-Con with your new Magic the Gathering comic.
Yeah,
that's right.
You have hordes of people that are coming to your table too. Yeah.
Well, thank you again so much, Joe Sophie, for talking to us.
Very excited. Guys. Very excited.
Yeah, it was good to see you again.
Yeah, you too. It's nice just chat.
Maybe we'll hang out and draw sometime.
We should do that.
Sometime.
Or you should do the magic thing.
or we could draw.
Comic reading.
All right. Take care of yourself.
Take care, guys.
Hi, Sophie.
Bye.
Bye, buddies.
Bye, buddies.